The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
We still have some people coming in, but I think we're going to start in the interest of time. So we'll start right at this point. Good morning, everyone. That's a very enthusiastic response. That is terrific. I'm Dan Metcalf of the Collaboration on Government Secrecy, or CGS for short. And on behalf of CGS and American University Washington College of Law here in Washington, D.C., I'd like to welcome you all to our program on information policies in the new administration. And I emphasize the phrase Washington, D.C., because this audience here, about 85-90% of you look sharp enough that you know you're in Washington, D.C., even though we're about a half mile from the line. But we have a broader audience than just the people who are here today. We are not just podcasting, but also webcasting this event by popular demand, which might mean just a few members of the media pressed the university to do that. And the Washington College of Law, the law school here, very kindly agreed not only to webcast, but also to create a live webcast. So as we are speaking and getting ready to discuss the issues that are of concern to us, know that through the lens right there over that photographer's head, we are webcasting out to the rest of the country and perhaps in some instances even the world with this program. So welcome to you as well watching this live webcast from the Washington College of Law. And I want to tell you, especially those of you who are watching remotely, that although you might not be able to see so clearly, because the camera, I believe, is in a fixed location, after some cold and icy weather the last couple of days here, and still continuing to be a bit icy this morning, we do indeed have the sun shining through those blinds, and which means that on this program regarding government openness, transparency, secrecy, which are really two sides of the same coin, we truly do have sunshine here in Washington today. And everyone, I think, here and elsewhere who cares about those issues and those matters, I think is quite pleased that we also have a change of administrations, but more to the point, a new administration that brings a different attitude toward openness in government and against secrecy, again, the other side of that coin, as evidenced by the remarkable day one issuances, the memoranda issued by President Obama when he was in office barely 24 hours, last Wednesday, the 21st. And as a matter of fact, I want to make sure that everyone here knows that we have those memoranda in your package, in your handouts. And when I say memoranda, I don't just mean the first memorandum entitled Transparency and Open Government, and the second memorandum directed to the Attorney General regarding Freedom of Information and a new holder FOIA memorandum that we can expect hopefully sooner rather than later. I also referred to two other documents that are in the handouts today, and specifically one is the White House press release that described those first two, and most significantly, describe the second one as following the same timetable as the first. The reason why that's particularly significant is that the first memorandum, which regards information policy in a broad sense, has a 120-day deadline, which is May 21st, by which certain federal agencies, under the guidance of the Chief Technology Officer, which is a new position, hopefully will be filled very soon, has to do certain things in the direction of transparency and open, participatory, collaborative government within that 120-day period. The second memo regarding or directed to the Attorney General does not mention 120 days. However, that White House press release does, in fact, speak of the two of them together and specify that both them have to be completed, those actions, within that same 120-day period. So we literally have a 120-day clock running on two separate tracks as of last Wednesday afternoon. And again, with the deadline being May 21st. The fourth document in the handout package, that is the separate one that those here received, is a transcript of the signing ceremony that was held at the White House, in which President Obama did indeed say many things that were quite positive and encouraging about openness in government and about the time for secrecy to change beyond even what he had in those two formal memoranda. So that's why you have those four things together, for those of you who are here, in your handout package. Now, just a quick word about the Collaboration on Government Secrecy. This is an educational center that we started here at the Washington College of Law in the fall semester of 2007. So this is our fourth semester. We've been in operation now for, well, getting closer to a year and a half. And this is the fifth program that we put on in these nice facilities. We're also going to have three more programs later this year, and I'll just briefly mention we're going to be celebrating Freedom of Information Day, which everyone knows is March 16th, James Madison's birthday. It's going to be celebrated elsewhere as well during Sunshine Week, but we will be having a celebration program here on March 16th, and we'll also be having a special program, a policy program, entitled 20 Years After the Reporters, or memorializing or celebrating or recognizing, I suppose, the 20th anniversary of the Supreme Court's decision in the Reporters Committee case, which is the landmark decision on privacy. We'll basically be taking a look at that decision and the privacy protection under the FOIA's privacy exemption and what that has led to now over the last 20 years, and consider perhaps whether it's time that Reporters Committee has run its course and perhaps should be changed either as a matter of policy or legislative reform. And I see Lucy Dogleish in the audience from the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, and I know that that is music to her ears, but actually that is competing heavily with the fact that Lucy, I think, for the last week has been on a week-long high after seeing all of those day one memoranda. Lucy has, I know, given a number of quotes where she has talked very enthusiastic about that. And I even joked to someone, and Lucy wouldn't mind my saying it, it's almost as if she's eaten ice cream for the first time. It's, I don't know, Lucy's young enough that she can remember when that actually happened. But every time I pick up the paper, I see another quote from Lucy, and she's saying, Mike, this is just fantastic, and using very enthusiastic language. And everyone feels that way. Not many people can put it as eloquently as Lucy does. I kid Lucy because she's also on the advisory board of the Collaboration of Government Secrecy, and she's been a very strong supporter of our program, and we have a very close relationship with the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press. Now, I mentioned that these clocks are running, 120-day clocks regarding the FOIA and FOIA-related things in particular, that's being handled by the Department of Justice primarily, perhaps not exclusively, and then the broader information policy matters being handled by OMB, the Chief Technology Officer, GSA, and I know that the Archivist of the United States will be in that mix as well. What this creates is a wonderful window of opportunity for those who care about openness in government, those who have great expertise in the area, who have been working in the field for a long time, who have been, and I'll use a mild word here, disconcerted by how things have gone over, let's say, the last 8 years and 8 days. Am I counting correctly? Well, you get the idea. A wonderful window of opportunity to make further recommendations to the Obama administration about how those memos should be fleshed out, what the content should be, how they should be implemented, and the like. And that's the major part of what this program is all about. As a matter of fact, the basic concept of it is that we have gathered together representatives of nearly all of the major organizations that have made recommendations going back to right after the election, and in some instances almost immediately after the election, because these are heads-up organizations that were working on this well in advance, made recommendations in various areas on a whole host of issues, dozens of points as to what should be done, what could be done, what they would like to see done in this broad area by the Obama administration. And what this program does here is add the additional element of not just whether something is done or even how it might be done, but how things are done relative to other things, specifically the prioritization of doing one thing sooner rather than later. It's in recognition of the fact that I think it can fairly be said that none of us here today, and I'm scanning the room just to see what the max age might be. I know there's one gentleman on the live webcast who's in his late 80s, so he might remember. I was about to say that it's been a long, long time since an administration has come into power having as many serious, vital, crucial, competing priorities as this one does. The economy is in a meltdown. Everyone uses the word cratering, which sounds not so good. We probably don't even yet know how bad it is now or how bad it might yet get. We have at least two wars, if not three, pending. It's not just Iraq and Afghanistan, but don't forget the GWAT. Does everyone know what the GWAT is? That's good. It's a global war on terror. And the point is, if you were in a position of authority in the incoming administration, you would have only so much time, so many resources, and you'd have to make some priority cuts. Well, the concept of this program is for representatives of these groups in two panels this morning to discuss the recommendations they have made. The first panel will be comprised of people who are going to talk about recommendations that are primarily transparency-related, Freedom of Information Act, but related in a transparency way. And they're going to mention, for example, something called TARP transparency. Does everyone know what the TARP is? Or bailout, how about that? Or financial stimulus transparency, a very, very large part of the picture nowadays. People who worry about transparency now are throwing those terms around or focusing in that area in a way that they never imagined just a few months ago that they would. Just like after 9/11 in 2001, people were suddenly talking about Homeland Security, and that term had not been in the lexicon since perhaps the demise of the Third Reich. To nowadays, everyone is worried about financial transparency and making sure that both as a matter of legislative mandate, administrative practice, and also administration policy, that there is openness there. So simply put, the taxpayers can get some greater inkling of where their money has gone and under what circumstances when it's been bailed out, delivered to various groups and organizations in the financial industry. Second panel will talk about information policy in a broader sense. We don't want to focus merely on transparency. Obviously, a big part of things is the Freedom of Information Act and access to records, but there are a host of issues that are collateral to that, not the least of which is pseudo-secrecy, which has to do with safeguarding labels and the proliferation of that, and the failed Bush administration attempt to try to get a handle on that with, unfortunately, a definition of controlled unclassified information that is unworkably broad. They will talk about those broader issues and have a discussion amongst themselves and hopefully with you as well. Then we'll have, skipping over our keynote speakers, we'll have a third panel this afternoon where their job is to start with the fact that you guys have gotten all jazzed up about what can be done, all these recommendations. They'll sort of try to take you down to earth a little bit. These are people who are going to tell you what it's like to be in an administration, be in government at the beginning of an administration, and how you might enthusiastically think that everything can be done right away, if not yesterday. And son of a gun, it takes longer than you might imagine. So that's why prioritization is important. So then when you're going to be brought back down to earth a little bit after panel three, we will immediately go into our last panel at about 3:15, in which we will discuss the survey questionnaire that we have given everyone. And this is a major, major part of the program. I'm holding up this green sheet. We have it color flagged in that way, so it's separate from everything else. And we will want you to be here at 3:15, right after panel three, to fill out this as we discuss both the methodology of the survey, the content of the questions. We'd like you to be thinking about these ideas as we go through the day, but please withhold your judgment until you hear the panels discuss them, including the third panel. Because what we're then going to do is take these results and we're going to compile them together and use them to send a letter to the administration. We're going to send a letter to the White House, to the Chief Technology Officer, to the Department of Justice, to the Archivist of the United States, to the new Director of the Office of Management and Budget. We might even CC a copy to GAO, come to think of it, and to the General Services Administration. And we're going to say, listen, we have gathered here together today people who are most expert in these areas, who have the most interest in these areas, and who are in a good position to judge what your priorities should be. Not just what you should do or how you should do it, but what you should do on a sooner rather than later basis. And we're going to say that everyone filled these out after hearing first the discussion of panel one, the discussion of panel two, the questions from the audience, the discussion with panel three. So you will be best informed to exercise the judgment that you manifest on these surveys. Now, I mentioned keynote speakers. Let me just quickly say that we're going to have a luncheon in the other part of the building. It's on the same floor, but on the other side, toward D.C. rather than the Maryland side of the building. And we're going to have Gary Stern, the general counsel of the archives, speaking to us there. I think we're going to have C-SPAN coverage of that event, although I haven't told Gary. I thought I'd just keep that as a surprise. But before we get there, you know, secrecy in the pursuit of humor is not necessarily a vice. Let's put it that way. Before we get there, and so I can get off the stage here as quickly as possible, I want to introduce our morning keynote speaker. Many of you may know her because, how can I put this? You know, sometimes you'll say to a friend, you know, most people don't scare me, but that person does. Well, Linda Kuntz was a longtime senior director at the the Government Accountability Office.
Very good.
Thank you. GAO for short, GAO to her friends. And she has more experience, I think, than just about anyone else at looking at the administration of government information programs government-wide under the Freedom of Information Act, the Privacy Act, in a broader sense. That was her mandate. She was the official who was charged with holding agencies' feet to the fire. And she's the one who wielded the big stick. And I can tell you this. She started doing, with her staff, audits of agency FOIA processes right after the hearings that were held in the summer of 2000. And I spent many a time sitting across the table from Linda. As a matter of fact, I will tell her now, I haven't told her before, that they were not only some of the most challenging, but also enjoyable times that I have ever spent. Just as I enjoyed sitting before the House of Representatives FOIA subcommittee, side by side with her, shoulder to shoulder, when we testified in, 2006, I guess it was. It was only 2.5 years ago. And she just recently, and by that I mean to say just last month, I think, retired from the federal government. I know she doesn't look old enough to be eligible, but apparently there was no bookkeeping finagling involved there. Retired from the federal government and is now working for MITRE Corporation, focusing primarily in the privacy area, I think, as a consultant slash official. Actually, I should emphasize the latter. And that's a wonderful corporation. My oldest daughter worked there for a while 5 years ago when she came out of grad school. And I know Linda's very happy there and having an impact. But I also have a feeling that Linda, now that she's in this different mode, might be able to speak more freely than she could when she was not only inside the federal government, but, how shall I say this, inside of GAO, which is even more tightly wound, perhaps, or constrained as to what... That's not too bad, is it, to say tightly wound?
Like tightly wound.
Tightly
that's
wound,
wonderful.
Yes. I mean that only in the best possible sense. So I think she has an opportunity to say some things that perhaps she might not have been able to say otherwise, or at least express them in a certain way. And she also, I think it's fair to say, can talk about things from a sort of unique perspective, sort of the catbird seat as someone who oversaw government processes. And one other thing I should mention, just to close, is that Linda did ask me this morning to make sure that I encourage you to ask not only many questions, but particularly difficult questions, only because Linda spent so many years closely questioning government agencies, and now she feels like it's only fair if she's on the receiving end. So please be unstinting in the questions you can ask her, not merely for that reason, but also because from Linda Kuntz, you can learn a lot. Please help me in welcoming her.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning to, well, see, they're a little more lively now. You got them wound up.
That's nothing compared to how lively they'll be by the time you finish.
That is true. My goodness, there's a lot of wires back here. It's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you for that very nice introduction. It's great to be here at the beginning of a new administration to talk about the Freedom of Information Act and about information policy. Dan and I did spend a lot of time together over the years when he was at OIP and I was at GAO.
Careful, and some of that is B6 information.
FOIA humor, I like that. And interestingly enough, I think that we actually agreed more often than we disagreed, but there were definitely some moments there. What I'd like to do over the next 15 minutes or so is to talk about what I learned in the last 9 years in studying the implementation of FOIA. My views are also influenced by being in a reverse position sometimes of having to respond to FOIA requests as well. So I've had the pleasure of being on the working side of it. GAO is not actually subject to FOIA, but the regulations do say that it will try to comply with the spirit of the law. As an auditor, and I think I will always think like an auditor, I'm a lot better about talking about the past than I am about the future. So please forgive me if it seems like this is a little bit of a trip down memory lane, because it is for me, but I'm hoping that what I've learned in the past will be instructive in the future. And then I'd like to talk a little more broadly about information policy. In the read-ahead material, I saw all the recommendations from the various groups on what the administration should do next, and I'd like to add my own personal wish list to those recommendations. And just as a side today, I am talking about some of the work that I led while I was at GAO, and my current employer, the MITRE Corporation, made it possible for me to be here today. But the views that I express are all my own, and they are not responsible.
It's not much different from the government, is it?
No. Here's the history part. In 1998, Dave Walker took over as Comptroller General of the United States, and one of the things that he did early on was to revitalize the agency's strategic planning process. And so the agency developed a strategic plan, and then he did, after an appropriate waiting period, what all great leaders do, and that is he reorganized the organization, and he made it aligned with that strategic plan. In that reorganization, I was given the position of Director of Information Management Issues, which meant that I got privacy, information collection and dissemination, records management, e-government, and FOIA, of course. And that meant I got all the unloved parts of information. But I was very, very excited to take on the opportunity. In mid-2000, as Dan alluded to, the Subcommittee on Information Management and Technology, which was chaired by Stephen Horn, he availed himself frequently of GAO services, had a hearing on implementing the eFOIA amendments. And at that hearing, the interest groups complained about the lack of compliance with the requirements, the lengthy delays in getting responses to their requests, and also some overly broad interpretations of the privacy exemption. And GAO did not testify at the hearing, but at the hearing, Chairman Horn did call for a GAO investigation. And so we issued our first report in March of 2001, which stated that, no surprise here, agencies had implemented many of the requirements, but not all of them. And we also identified some data quality issues that we worked with Dan on over the next few years. I'd like to think that the fact we were asked to do that actually helped move the ball forward a little bit, because I think compliance was higher than what it had previously been perceived to be. And over the next 9 years, GAO would issue 9 reports and testimonies on FOIA. That there was no other area in my portfolio where there was such continuing interest and requests. And I would say, actually, we always had a FOIA review going on. There was no other area like that. And GAO had previously had not done some work in FOIA for several years. So it was a very steady workload, and I think it continues today. And in fact, I'm looking forward to being the reader, to reading as a citizen, the report that I know is coming on Homeland Security's FOIA program. Based on the 9 year that we did, there's a number of things that I learned that I'd like to share with all of you. First of all, I was always impressed with the caliber of the people who work on FOIA and care about open government and FOIA issues and transparency. And this included Dan, and I see his co-director Dick Huff is here today, their staff at OIP, and the agency people that I had the pleasure to meet with over the years. I think that we at GAO had a very positive, constructive sort of relationship with OIP. We found them willing to listen. They acted on the majority of our recommendations. I have to say, at one point when we were meeting with Dan and Dick, and GAO always gets comments on our draft products to make sure that we've got the facts right and that our recommendations are something that are doable, and we went through all the slides, and they gave me very detailed feedback, and at the end I said, well, guys, would it be appropriate for me to characterize that OIP generally agreed with our assessment and our recommendations? And Dan looked at me and said, no, that would be wrong. I was surprised, and he said, no, we fully agree. And I had to break it to him that generally agree is as good as you get with GAO. And working on information policy, too, was my first experience in really working a lot with interest groups. But I found them to be thoughtful, and they had examples, they had data, and the kind of stuff that an auditor really likes to see. All that said, though, FOIA programs are like many of the programs that I looked at over the years when I was at GAO. It's clearly been undervalued. It's clearly suffered from a lack of top management attention. There are definitely resource issues. And there's a point that was harder to make when I was at GAO. I think there's much more that needs to be done to make the sort of the whole of agencies see FOIA as much a mission as the other things they do as government, you know, collecting taxes and building weapon systems and making policy. And so I was happy to see the memo that came out so early in the new administration about the FOIA that set sort of a clear and positive tone at the top. The next thing I'd like to talk about is the Ashcroft memo. When I talked to Dan the other day about speaking here, I asked him if there was anything in particular that he wanted me to touch on. He said, you know, you could talk about that study that you did on the Ashcroft memo. And he has such a fantastic memory, because I had almost forgotten it, because it's about 6 years and 50 reports ago. But for a report we issued in 2003, we surveyed FOIA officers at 25 major agencies, and we wanted to find out whether there had been a change in the likelihood of making discretionary disclosures under FOIA. And we found, actually, that the largest percentage of FOIA officers said they just hadn't seen any change at all. But there was about a third who said that they thought there had been a decrease in their likelihood to make discretionary disclosures, and most of them thought it was due to the Ashcroft memo. So now that I'm no longer with GAO, I can speculate a little bit here, which we do not do when you work there.
Is that one definition of tightly wound?
Yes, it could be. No speculation allowed. But I think that the memo is, frankly, it was unlikely to affect all kinds of FOIA requests equally. It is unlikely to affect many of the disclosures that go on at SSA and DOD and VA and those sorts of things. So I think, you know, looking back, I think that one-third was quite significant that they thought that there was a decrease in the likelihood of making a discretionary disclosure. So it leads me to conclude that these memos are important. The holder memo is going to be important and it's going to have a big influence on what happens in agencies. I'd also like to talk a little bit about the many facets there are of FOIA. There's the big government-wide story that GAO always reported, and that was we were saying across government, requests were going up, most requests were granted in full, but the backlog might be going up, the backlog might be going down, the backlog might be staying the same way. So there's that big macro picture. But also then when you start to look more carefully at the agencies, I mean, the agencies are very, very different. This is not monolithic by any means. And there are a lot of stories there in the specific agencies. And then when you even, in a few cases, and this was very difficult for us to do because of the scope of it, when we started looking at individual cases, at one point we looked at the 10 oldest cases at certain agencies, and every one of them seemed to have sort of a unique story as well that varied from agency to agency. So my point here is that I think that over the years that I was at GAO, we did a really great job of looking at that big picture. I'd like to see some focus shift to some of the smaller pictures, because I don't think this is a one-size-fits-all world at all, and that it might be useful to look at agencies, for example, who have the majority of the backlog, who make the most use of not disclosed for other reasons, whatever that means. And there may be some unique problems that need to be addressed, and there might be a way to make, even with a smaller scope, there might be a way to make a bigger impact. I don't think I don't think GAO can do all that, but I think that's something for the oversight community as a whole to maybe address. Another area where we spent quite a bit of time, like sort of at the end of my tenure, was the FOIA executive order. And the order clearly did place a lot more emphasis on FOIA and made managers pay attention to it. And it does appear, to the extent you can tell, that it did have a positive effect on backlog, at least the last time we reported. But when I say to the extent that you can tell, that's significant. At times, we really lacked the data to be able to tell what was happening with FOIA requests. And it's clear that what is really needed here is good, consistent reporting across agencies and accurate data in order to find out whether what we're doing is really working. And this is a very basic point, but it was a consistent theme in the work that we did over the years. And you might have noticed in the last few reports that GAO has done, we've left off entire agencies. And the reason we left off entire agencies is because we could not verify that they had collected the data in such a way that it would be accurate and reliable. And auditing standards tell you can't just report data unless you have some reason to believe it was accurate. And we did not have that evidence. And I realize that this is a point that maybe only an auditor would love. It's about data. It's about data reliability. But I think it's very important, and it's an important point going forward and something that we definitely need to work on. In our last report, it says what gets measured gets managed. And so it's important that we have the right data in order to do that. And finally, on the point of FOIA, I think it's good to improve communications between agencies and the public and try to get FOIA processes as efficient as possible, but we need to do more. Resources are always going to be a constraint. Everyone always needs more. And as we said in the report last year, and I'll just read this, the challenge to agency management is to determine how to apply finite resources to respond to the multiple and sometimes competing demands placed on their FOIA programs. So we need to continue to look at investing in technology. And I'm talking about case management technology, redaction technology, and everything else that helps you speed up the process. But also, I think we need to be looking more broadly. We need to be looking at content management. We need to be looking at electronic record-keeping systems, things that will allow us to know where our information is and access it more easily. I am sure that a lot of time is spent just doing data calls in these large agencies trying to find out what information we have and whether it's responsive. We need to look at more ways to do affirmative disclosure, but maybe we need to be sort of more modest in our expectations. In looking at some of the old hearings about eFOIA, I think there were hopes at one point that with enough affirmative disclosure, we could eliminate FOIA requests, maybe even bring them down to zero. But you have to look at my experience over the last 10 years, we've been disseminating the heck out of information all across the government, and FOIA requests have continued to rise. Now,
I apologize for interrupting, but did you just say eliminate FOIA requests?
Yes.
As opposed to eliminating the backlog?
No. Nope. I actually read that.
Eliminating FOIA requests.
Right. There was some very ambitious thoughts at the time.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Okay. Keep me honest.
Because the last administration sometimes wanted to eliminate FOIA requests.
That's not exactly what I meant, Dan.
That's not at all what you meant. Okay.
That's not exactly what I meant. But the point is that, and it might be that we haven't made the information as accessible as we could, and I think there's more leeway in order to do that. But at the same time, it might be what agencies told us over the years repeatedly, is that sometimes more information whets the appetite for more information. Fulfilling requests sometimes makes people ask more complicated questions. Is that bad thing? I think not. I think it's a good thing to have a public who is interested in what their government is doing. Now, I have to admit I was a little bit discouraged when I found out a lot of them wanted to know about the astronaut lady murder love triangle at NASA. But nonetheless, I think overall it's still a good trend. And finally, I'd like to turn to my sort of personal wish list on information policy, and I'm not sure we all share the same definition of information policy, so I'll go with my own. First, when I read President Obama's memo about transparency that was released the day after his inauguration, I was very encouraged by that, especially to see it so early in the administration. And I hope that the things that are in that memo is the way that every department secretary and agency head talks to their staff, because this needs to be pushed down in the organizations all the way to the bottom of every rank and file staff in agencies. I hope we see some concrete strategies going forward. I hope we see goals and strategic plans. I hope we see things in SES contracts. I hope we see OMB tracking progress. I mean, those kinds of things are the only way we're really going to see this get done. And second, and I'm harping on this subject a little bit, I would like to see the government do more, agencies move more toward content management systems, electronic record keeping systems. I think there is definitely some resistance to doing this. I've had lots of conversations with NARA about it and with some proposed legislation that was done last year. I think that this would not only improve records management, which is important, but would also improve our ability to know what information we have and to be able to use it for business processes, but also be able to respond to FOIA requests to the public. And I know it costs money. It probably will cost a lot of money. Everything does. We may have to do it incrementally. We may have to do it slowly, but I think we have to do it, and I think that we need to start moving in that direction. And finally, I'd like to see the administration work with the Congress on new comprehensive privacy legislation. I don't know if this actually fits here, but I'd like to share it anyway. The Privacy Act clearly is outdated, no longer consistent with the way that agencies use information or the technology and analytical techniques that they're employing. So I just add that in as a bonus, and yesterday was Privacy Day anyway, so it's very fitting. So to wrap up, I'd like to say again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I look forward to the discussion that we're going to be having over the day. I think these are very, very important issues. In the future, I won't have the same sort of unique view or vantage point that I did at GAO, but they're issues that I still continue to follow. So thank you, and do we have time for questions?
We do have time for some.
And I did, you know, Dan sort of forgets that, you know, I spent a lot of time in the hot seat up on, you know, Capitol Hill. So those guys asked me some pretty hard questions, too. So
that's true. I didn't mean to imply otherwise.
Okay.
Because when we were testifying together, I tended to try to shift the hard ones your way.
And you were quite successful.
Rick.
I'm Rick Bloom with the Sunshine and Government Initiative, and I wonder, hello, the National Archives now has this new Office of Government Information Services that it'll be starting up as soon as it gets a little bit of cash, and I'm wondering, part of their role is to do audits and to do oversight to some extent of how agencies are implementing their FOIA operations. What advice do you have for the OGIS director to drill down, as you were talking about, to get to some of those smaller, narrower problems to have the biggest impact early?
Well, first of all, I don't know as I would see them as actually doing audits per se in the same way that I understand audits, and it may be very difficult for them to do the kind of thing that I'm talking about, which is starting to drill down at a very deep level on issues. I think, though, that they could make a lot of impact, though, by engaging with specific agencies, because we have a wealth of data out there about FOIA. You can tell, you know, where agencies line up, who has, you know, who has the most requests, who has the biggest backlog, who has the fewer grants, who has, you know, there's lots of clues about where you could target in and where you could start those discussions with people to try to understand what the barriers are and then try to address them. I think in terms of the larger audit, it may be a function of the oversight community, you know, which may include inspectors general, for example. And I know they do some FOIA work, but they are positioned, you know, very, very well in order to look in detail at specific departments and agencies. Thank you.
Does anyone want to ask Linda just one more question, such as what do you think was the most difficult FOIA issue or even government information policy issue in general that you dealt with during your decade focusing on that? Can you prioritize in that way and pick out one that stands apart, not just that one regarding fee waivers in the Department of Energy that we disagreed so vitally about?
He did. I wondered if you would remember that was the one issue that Dan and I disagreed on.
You were so wrong, Linda.
I know. I wasn't wrong.
Let the transcript reflect. The following words were, I know. The witness is excused. No, seriously.
Okay.
If you had to pick one perhaps other than that. I don't mean difficult as the process, but difficult as it being an intractable problem, difficult to get a handle on, difficult for agencies to address, that sort of thing.
To me, the most difficult issue to address is that on one hand there's this public expectation to, you know, and from the press and from various groups for agencies to respond to FOIA requests. And, you know, we would go up frequently on the Hill and, you know, the members would say, you know, bring out their favorite anecdote about how somebody waited 7 years for a FOIA request and, you know, wasn't it awful? And obviously, you know, the federal employees weren't, you know, working hard enough at this because there's no excuse for it. But I think it was sort of it was sort of the problem of wanting everything, you know, wanting everything both ways, because it, I mean, clearly this is an area where people just didn't pay attention to it, and managers didn't think it was important, and nobody was willing to spend too much money on it. And those two things just seemed to be at war, and it did almost seem to be an intractable problem. And I, you know, we can look at FOIA and try to figure out how to speed up the process, but there's only so fast that process is going to go unless we sort of step back and look more fundamentally at things.
I think we have one more there, but I just want to ask you briefly, as a corollary to what you just said, and particularly keying in on your use of the word intractable, once I pronounce it correctly and get it out.
Okay. I couldn't spit it out either.
Does that make you, and I'm going to give you only two choices here.
Okay.
In true GAO fashion, does that make you optimistic or pessimistic about whether the backlog problems of federal agencies will ever be solved?
It makes me pessimistic.
Okay. I'm sure Meredith Fuchs has a more optimistic question.
I hope so. I'm depressed now, Dan.
As one of the people who regularly went up to the Hill and gave examples of old requests, it was very easy for us to portray the government as ineffective because, frankly, the reports that they filed were virtually meaningless mm-hmm. and misrepresented the state of affairs. Mm-hmm. I'm curious whether with the changes in the Open Government Act of 2007, you think that those reports are going to be any more helpful in illustrating, you know, the state of affairs in FOIA processing.
Yes, thank you. That is something I'm much more optimistic about. And we worked very closely, GAO worked very closely with the Hill on that legislation. And I think a lot of the additions that the additional data that are being collected is going to be very useful going forward so that we can see a better picture. Just the simple addition of being able to report average response days and not just the median made a lot of difference to us in terms of our ability to sort of aggregate the information and be able to get a government-wide picture and be able to track that over time. So I'm thinking that will help. What it doesn't address, though, is the thing I talked about earlier, and that is the actual data quality, which is something that, you know, is not a very sexy topic. It's about internal controls, and it's about having process and procedure. But that equally needs to be addressed in order for those reports to really be most meaningful.
Thank you, Linda. We very much appreciate your insights and your starting us off this morning in a very foreign form.
Thank you.
We're now going to